life, liberty, and Torah. Last week I shared this in my closing. There are no proxies in life. No one has the authority or the power to act on your behalf unless you give it to them. Jerry alluded to something similar in her drash. Thus, there is liberty in life for which we are afforded by our Creator, and thus, if He has given us these inalienable rights, then there must be life and liberty in Torah. I had concluded this in my message last week. Thus, let me provide you with a couple of definitions. I'm going to give you one on one word now, and then throughout my message, I'm going to give you another, because I want to say this without offending anyone. I don't think people truly pay attention to what words truly mean. They get used very nonchalantly. Sometimes they get used carelessly. So I want to make sure that, one, I am not using the words carelessly, because I will tend to look up a word before I intend on using it. And then I want to make sure that you are equipped to understand the words that I'm using so that you don't use them carelessly either. So in this world, you may be able to give your proxy. That is the agency, function, or office of a deputy who acts as a substitute for another in certain situations. A substitute, not in place of. Here's one of the definitions. If allowed, you can give your right for someone else to cast your vote as a shareholder at a shareholders meeting of a corporation. Typically, one is in agreement with whom they are giving their proxy to. So basically, you're giving it to them that they're going to vote the same way that you would vote typically. We see this in government recently. The House of Representatives is currently allowing voting by proxy online through Zoom. So the rule is that you have to be present to vote. Now you can vote by proxy via Zoom. So you don't have to be in person. So this capacity is limited in scope and responsibility in the world, but is non-existent in the kingdom. One does not have the ability to become a representative or substitute for another. It is not something that Adonai allows of any individual. You do not have the authority to take another's place. We are able to intercede on one's behalf, but we cannot take their place. We read of Moses as the mediator between the children of Israel and of Adonai. We first read of what transpired. This is during the golden calf. Adonai said to Moses, "Go down, hurry, your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt, have become corrupt." It's the analogy that we use in the congregation. When you guys are good, you belong to Jerry. When you guys are bad, you're mine. So God is basically saying the same thing. Your people. So quickly, they have turned aside from the way I ordered them to follow. They have cast a metal statue of a calf, worshipped it, sacrificed to it, and said, "Israel, here is your God who you brought up from the land of Egypt." Adonai continued speaking to Moses. "I have been watching these people, and you can see how stiff-necked they are. Now leave me alone so that my anger can blaze against them and I can put an end to them. I will make a great nation out of you instead." For the anger of Adonai has flared, so much so that Moses, having heard what he intended to do, interceded on behalf of the people. Moses pleaded with Adonai. He said, "Adonai, why must your anger blaze against your own people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and a strong hand? Why let the Egyptians say it was with evil intentions that he led them out to slaughter them in the hills and wipe them off the face of the earth?" Turn from your fierce anger. Relent. Don't bring such disaster on your people. This is Moses telling God to repent, to relent of his anger. And then he goes on to instill some Jewish guilt. Remember Abraham, Yitzhak, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your very self. You promised them, I will make your descendants as many as the stars in the sky, and I will give all this land I have spoken about to your descendants, and they will possess it forever. Thus, as a result of Moses' action on behalf of the people, the destruction of the entire nation had been averted, for Adonai had changed his mind about the disaster he had planned for his people. Yet this did not exonerate the guilty. The next day, Moses said to the people, "You have committed a terrible sin. Now I will go up to Adonai. Maybe I will be able to atone for your sin." Moses went back up to Adonai and said, "Please, these people have committed a terrible sin. They have made themselves a god out of gold. Now, if you will just forgive their sin, but if you won't, then I beg you, blot me out of your book, which you have written." Adonai answered Moses, "Those who have sinned against me are the ones I will blot out of my book. Now go and lead the people to the place I told you about. My angel will go ahead of you. Nevertheless, the time for punishment will come, and then I will punish them for their sin." Adonai struck the people with a plague because they had made the calf, the one Aaron made. Adonai reveals his 13 attributes for which we witness on display as a result of the golden calf. In Exodus 34, he conveys his name. Then he says that he is merciful and compassionate, slow to anger, rich in grace and truth, showing grace to the thousandth generation, forgiving offenses, crimes, and sins, yet not exonerating the guilty, but causing the negative effects of the parents' offenses to be experienced by their children and grandchildren, even to the third and fourth generation. So forgiving offenses, yet not exonerating the guilty, is what true equity is, a term thrown about today in a manner by which does not align with the definition. And the definition is simply the quality of being fair and impartial. Adonai is being fair and impartial here. Only those who are truly guilty of instigating the matter would be punished here. For not too long ago, Adonai had revealed to the people through Moses the laws of the covenant, for which included, "You are not to have any other gods before me. You are not to make for yourselves a carved image of any kind of representation of anything in heaven above, on the earth beneath, or in the water below the shoreline. You are not to bow down to them or serve them, for I, Adonai, am a jealous God, punishing the children for their sins of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me." Notice that some of the attributes from Exodus 34 are revealed here as well. God is a jealous God. The excuse, "I didn't know," isn't applicable here. Yet the same in the tort of law today is the same in the law of God as well. Ignorance is no defense, whether it's the law of God or whether it's the laws of society. Thus, liberty is not absent of laws, but structured by laws, intended for the well-being of all. So what is liberty? Liberty is a state of being free within society from oppressive restrictions imposed by authority on one's way of life, behavior, or political views. Another definition, the power or scope to act as one pleases. Now, keeping in mind the mindset of today, whereby Torah is presented as legalism, and as such does not instill liberty, is a fallacy. For without Torah, by which many of today's moral laws are based, would likely result in anarchy, an aspect for which many cities have experienced over the past year. What about the argument of our moral compass has directed us, and it is not of God? Some may rationalize that as a people, we have evolved in our thinking, and as such have established a moral standard that offers equity to all. For starters, one can always make such a statement. Yet even by making such a statement doesn't mean that it's true. Moral relativism, a component of humanism, conveys morality from a human perspective. Yet I would go beyond this and convey that our morals were instilled upon us at the time of creation, yet have been impaired by our acquired sin disorder, thus creating conflicts between us and Adonai's Torah, and thus confusing what our definition of what being moral truly is. Now, keeping in mind, many of you in the congregation are familiar with this term, acquired sin disorder. And basically, it occurred at the fall when our ancestors partook in the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thus inflicting his generations to come with a pandemic that is incurable except for one aspect, and that is the blood of Messiah, or those looking forward to the promise of the blood of Messiah. So consider the following verse from Isaiah, and thus his warning to the nation of Judah in relating to their transgressions. This is Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20 and 21. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who change darkness into light and light into darkness, and change bitter into sweet and sweet into bitter. Woe to those seeing themselves as wise, esteeming themselves as clever. What may appear to be good from a human perspective is abhorrent from Adonai's perspective. Let your own thoughts fill in the blanks, for it is not too hard to do today. As you study Torah, I truly believe the Ruach HaKodesh will connect the dots for you, at the very least, if not present you with clear and impactful contradictions of man's morality versus God's righteousness. Thus, if Torah is legalism, then Adonai is legalistic, because these are his mitzvot. Deuteronomy 30:10. However, all this will happen only if you pay attention to Adonai your God, and says, so that you obey his mitzvot and regulations, which are written in this book of the Torah. If you turn to Adonai your God with all your heart and all your being. So if Adonai is legalistic, then Yeshua is legalistic as well. Don't think that I have come to abolish the Torah or the prophets. I have not come to abolish, but to complete. Yet Yeshua not only validates Torah by not abolishing it, but affirms it by teaching it. Consider this passage from Matthew 22. Rabbi, which of the mitzvot in the Torah is the most important? Someone's asking him about the mitzvot of Adonai. Which is the most important? And he told them, you are to love Adonai your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. This is the greatest and most important mitzvah. And a second is similar to it. You are to love your neighbor as yourself. And this is where he affirms it. All the Torah and the prophets are dependent on these two mitzvot. Thus, what does Torah do but holds us individually accountable? You may be able to love your neighbor as yourself, but you can't bear his transgressions on yourself. A nation as a whole, called by Adonai, yet comprised of individuals, are equally accountable to Adonai. For within Torah, he has allowed for substitution regarding one's sins through the sacrificial system, whereby a transgression towards one of Adonai's mitzvot can only be atoned for through the death of an innocent and the shedding of blood. A cost and an action that should convey to the one who transgresses, I am the one responsible. That should be me. For Adonai has made provision in atoning for transgression that is committed inadvertently or unintentionally by the individual through the asham and the chatat, two of the sin sacrifices that we see in Leviticus chapters 4 and 5. For we read in chapter 4 and verse 2, tell the people of Israel, if anyone sins inadvertently against any of my mitzvot concerning things which should not be done, if he does any of them. So this act of transgression, when identified, is to emit, evoke a response from the individual. Thus listing instructions, if it is the Kohen, the entire community, a leader or an individual, each has a means to reconcile to Adonai. In each scenario, each is to bring the required sacrifice. Each is to seek forgiveness through teshuvah, a combination of confession and repentance that we read of in Leviticus 5, 5, and 6. A person guilty of any of these things is to confess in what manner he sinned and bring his guilt offering to Adonai for the sin he committed. It is to be a female of the flock, and so on. So it identifies. So you're to confess, and you're to bring something. For it is through this, and the application of blood on the altar, according to Leviticus 17:11, for the life of the creature is in the blood, and I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for yourselves. For it is the blood that makes atonement because of the life. Thus, life atones for life. We see the substitution on Yom Kippur through the Kohen HaGadol's laying of hands upon one of the goats and offering the other goat for Adonai as the blood on the altar. So we read the first aspect in Leviticus 16, 15, and 16. Next, he is to slaughter the goat of the sin offering, which is for the people, bringing its blood inside the curtain and do with its blood as he did with the bull's blood, sprinkling it on the ark cover and in front of the ark cover. He will make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the people of Israel and because of their transgressions, all their sins, and he is to do the same for the tent of meeting, which is there with them in the middle of their uncleanness. So you have the aspect of blood being applied on the altar, the substitution of an animal for the wages of our transgression, which is death. And then in verses 21 and 22 of Leviticus 16, Aaron is to lay both hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the transgressions, crimes, and sins of the people of Israel. He is to put them on the head of the goat and then send it away into the desert with a man appointed for the purpose. The goat will bear all their transgressions away to some isolated place, and he is to let the goat go in the desert. So that further affirms one's life through the liberty afforded by Torah, the means of sacrifice and confession. Were not oppressive, but restorative, an individual responsibility that could not be transferred to anyone else. The Kohen would intercede, yet could not replace. The sacrificial system was an avenue to restoration that was freely accessed should one desire to restore their relationship with Adonai. It was not forced. Yet the lack of action did bear consequences. Ask the northern tribes of Israel about their lack of action. Ask the southern tribes about their lack of action and what transpired. Within a covenant, there are conditions to be upheld. Within a nation, there are laws that define the liberty afforded within that nation. So let me redefine liberty again so that you have it fresh in your minds. It is the state of being free within society from oppressive restrictions imposed by authority on one's way of life, behavior, or political views. And it is the power or scope to act as one pleases. The only substitution accepted by Adonai is Yeshua, for whom he reveals on Yom Kippur. I want you to pay attention to the words and the allusion that's being conveyed here, because it does not seem like it on the surface. But when you see the words being used, and then you're able to relate those words, you'll understand better. The Kohen anointed and consecrated to be Kohen in his father's place will make the atonement. He will put on the linen garments, the holy garments. He will make atonement for the especially holy place. He will make atonement for the tent of the meeting and the altar, and he will make atonement for the Kohanim and for the people of the community. Now, keeping in mind, this is all talking about the human Kohen, yet it's the first line, the Kohen anointed and consecrated to be Kohen in his father's place. Yeshua was anointed to be Kohen in his father's place. Interceding, doing exactly what the Kohen is to do, Yeshua did as well. Alluding that the Kohen consecrated in the Father's place, in one sense represents Aaron and his sons and their descendants, yet the subtle play of words conveys a Kohen who is anointed in his Father's place will make atonement for the children of Israel. And thus we see through the prophet Isaiah, the suffering servant, and the substitution that's talked about here in verse 11. After this ordeal, he will see satisfaction. By his knowing pain and sacrifice, my righteous servant makes many righteous. It is for their sins that he suffers. Therefore, I will assign him a share with the great. He will divide the spoil with the mighty, for having exposed himself to death and being counted among the sinners, while actually bearing the sin of many and interceding for the offenders. So here you have glimpses that God is revealing mysteries, hidden truths, that there is something greater that is to happen. and finally revealing for us the one and only acceptable substitute. You know this verse, but do you know the verses that follow it? For God so loved the world that he gave his only and unique Son, so that everyone who trusts in him may have eternal life instead of being utterly destroyed. For God did not send his Son into the world to judge the world, but rather so that through him the world might be saved. Those who trust in him are not judged. Those who do not trust have been judged already, in that they have not trusted in the one who is God's only and unique Son. Might I say God's only and unique substitute? Now, this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, but people love the darkness rather than the light. Why? Because their actions were wicked. For everyone who does evil things hates the light and avoids it, so that his actions won't be exposed. But everyone who does what is true comes to the light, so that all may see that his actions are accomplished through God. So God made a way, God prepared a way, God provided a substitute, and only one substitute. For in all cases we are given the liberty to accept what Adonai has revealed to us, or reject it for some human form or non-equivalent. In other words, well, I can do this in place of that. There is no substitute. There is no replacement. The liberty to choose has always been there. Whether Adam and Hava, the nation of Israel, or the Goyim, the nations, for Adonai has revealed himself through his creation. For Shaul conveys in Romans 1, for ever since the creation of the universe, his invisible qualities, both his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly seen because they can be understood from what he has made. Therefore, they have no excuse. Because although they know who God is, they do not glorify him as God or thank him. On the contrary, they have become futile in their thinking, and their undiscerning hearts have become darkened. Claiming to be wise, they have become fools. So I want to share this with you. It's going to be an article that I'm going to be talking about. It's based on an Ask the Rabbi question. And the author is Corinna Benton, and she conveys this within her article. The division within Christianity is illusory. In other words, it's an illusion. The division within Christianity is an illusion. However, God's law, which flows from his perfect nature, is rational, immutable, and eternal. It doesn't evolve or adapt. The message of Messiah of repentance and redemption applies to all people and all nations across all ages. Thus, the concept of life and liberty through Messiah is the exact same message of Torah. There is life through liberty, the ability to choose, the ability to live. Deuteronomy 30, look, I am presenting you today with, on the one hand, life and good, on the other hand, death and evil. And that I am ordering you today to love Adonai your God, to follow his ways, and to obey his mitzvot, regulations and rulings. For if you do, you will live and increase your numbers, and Adonai your God will bless you in the land you are entering in order to take possession of it. He's ordering the nation, but the nation still has the ability to choose. He's not going to be right there waiting and monitoring them at a moment's notice. He's going to give them opportunity. Part of liberty is coming to the realization that you made a mistake or that you transgressed one of God's mitzvot. So the offer is on the table. Verse 17, but if your heart turns away, if you refuse to listen, if you are drawn away to prostrate yourselves before other gods and serve them, conditional, if you don't listen, if you do what you think is right. So the conditions are there that you can choose. I am announcing to you today that you will certainly perish. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. I call on heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have presented you with life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life so that you will live, you and your descendants, loving Adonai your God, paying attention to what he says, and clinging to him. For that is the purpose of your life. Everyone to know what the meaning of life is? Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 20. On this depends the length of time you will live in the land Adonai swore he would give to your ancestors, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. So the offer is on the table, and he's given you the choice, and he's told you what would occur if you chose one or if you chose the other. So what's he saying that's not written here at the end? He's ultimately saying the choice is yours. I'm reminded of Indiana Jones in the cavern where all the chalices are. And you have one of the Knights of the Templar there guarding. And it's like, which is the King of Kings' Holy Grail, so to speak? One chose unwisely, looking at the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords from man's perspective, thinking it would be magnificent in its presentation and it's adorned with many, many valuable things. Then Indiana Jones wondering, it's like, okay, because going through there, there was the image of a penitent man, a man who humbles himself and gets on his knees. So he's thinking through, I believe, at least as the writers did it, through God's perspective, not man's perspective. And what was the chalice but a little wood carved? So you have the ability to choose. You've been given the opportunity to choose. So the choice is yours. He's laid everything out for you. Don't believe in God? Look around. It's out there for you to see his craftsmanship. He is not a shoddy craftsman. Everything is intricate. Everything is detailed. We're only discovering the complexity of the human body, whose initial components were clay and water. And out of this, you have DNA with intricate chromosomal configurations that in essence, each one of you, you may have the same number of chromosomes, yet your DNA makeup is unique to you specifically. So if you can't see this, maybe you're not looking hard enough, and you don't have to look that hard. Look in the mirror. How were we created? We were created in the image and likeness of God. His desire is to see His reflection in you. So keep that in mind. So if everybody would please rise.